Can you spot the cars that are most impacting margins? LotLinks can, and they help dealers move them. Learn how LotLinks empowers auto retailers to proactively manage inventory risk and improve profitability by requesting a free consultation today at www.lotlinks.com/drive.
Welcome in to another edition of Weekend Drive. I'm Mike Martinez, happy to be joining you on this Saturday. Happy to be joined in studio by two of my colleagues, Larry Veliquette and Jackie Charnica. Guys, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you for having us.
Anytime.
Now, happy to have you guys because we'll be talking about two very important and timely topics. Jackie, the first is yours, sort of a groundbreaking package you've been working on for a while in the most recent edition of Automotive News titled Trouble Down the Line, all about the opioid crisis and how it's affecting the auto industry. And I guess I'm curious why the auto industry is sort of fertile ground for this problem.
Right. Thanks, Mike. Well, there's really three components to why the automotive industry in particular has been so hard hit. And those really are the geography of where it's located, the necessity for drugs for pain management, and really the access to those drugs. So the first thing, when I started on this project, I had a very unscientific approach. So I looked at where the automotive plants were located in the United States, and I compared that to where the CDC had said there had been the highest rates of opioid overdose death. And when I came into Automotive News in 2017, I figured that this had to have been a massive issue. It was nationwide, and that there was really no way, given where they were located, that the automotive industry was not going to be impacted.
So let's talk about why there's a correlation in the plants, and it has to do with workers and the repetitive, straining jobs that a lot of them have on the line, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of the employees that I've spoken with, particularly in Ford, in their Kentucky truck plant, have said that they had gotten workplace injuries, which led them into opioid addiction. So one of the workers that I interviewed 2 years ago, Patrick Coleman, he was working on the line and he developed an umbilical hernia. So he required surgery and he was exposed to opioids for the first time. And within 2 years of employment at Ford Motor Company, he had been in opioid recovery four times, three of which were paid for by the automaker. And recovering from opioids is a lot different than other substance use, for instance, alcoholism or crack cocaine addiction. Opioids are a lot harder to get over.
And it seems like, you know, the UAW has a notoriously generous healthcare plan for its members, maybe easier access to these types of drugs than other people may have. Jackie, I'm curious what the union and the Detroit 3 automakers are doing, either through collective bargaining or outside of those contracts, to help combat this issue.
Well, a lot needed to be done for the opioid epidemic in particular. A lot of the automaker policies, and really just a lot of workplace policies in North America, are predicated on the idea of no tolerance workplaces. So no drugs in the plants and no tolerance for those who are caught sort of with substances in their system. So the idea was that a lot of the automaker plans were not set up for legal drugs and people developing addictions to those drugs that were actually paid for and prescribed through the company health plan. So a lot of the automakers did take action sort of very quietly behind the scenes. There weren't any press releases or notifications to the public what they were doing, but they recognized that this was a problem in their plants and what they needed to do. There was overhauling how employees are sort of reporting, the idea that they have to monitor more closely what is being prescribed to employees and how much is being prescribed at a certain time. And Ford, in particular, was one of the most visible automakers when it came to opioid awareness. And they rolled out the Campaign of Hope in 2016, and that traveled to all of the plants, educating and giving more awareness as to the dangers of opioid use and addiction, and also sort of determining what is drug use versus drug dependence. That's something that the automakers are still trying to define, as well as other North American companies.
And in Kentucky, they've even tried some experimental therapies. Is that correct?
That's true. And that is from the Todd Dunn, who is the president of a local union down there. And he had discovered a treatment, a medical device that is not a drug, but rather something that is implanted. So it's called Lennis Freedom device. It's been cleared by the FDA, and essentially it uses sort of the acupressure points that deliver what they claim is drug dependence relief. So it sort of quelches the symptoms of withdrawal long enough so that an employee in recovery can function long enough to stay in recovery and doesn't leave.
You know, I was really taken in your story by one of the things that the head of the Ford union down there said, which is no one in the plant is untouched by this. And indeed, if you look at how they've done this and how they've worked cooperatively on this, it's very clear this is not a contentious issue at all. But, you know, just like society, we're facing it, we're trying to face it together, and really nobody's got any answers.
Well, it's also important to point out that not everybody in the plant has a substance use disorder. It could be their family members. It could be a neighbor or a friend. But regarding if it's a family member, that's somebody that Ford in particular is still part of their healthcare plan. They're still paying those costs that are associated with treatment. So there's a good reason that Ford in particular with the Campaign of Hope really made it a community sort of event. They worked with local recovery centers. They talked with a lot of people. It was really open, these meetings that they held, and not necessarily open to the public, but open to the media, I should say, but very much open to the communities, like friends and family could come in and learn about what were the dangers, how to make sure you're using drugs safely and in disposing of opioids when they're no longer in use.
Smart cars, smart homes, smart marketing technology? You better believe it. The beginnings of a technological revolution are on the horizon. In automotive, LotLinks is powering the next generation approach to dealership marketing with artificial intelligence. Their patented inventory marketing technology identifies cars that are most impacting margins, such as aging, volume, or incentive units, and helps move them by delivering vehicle-specific consumer demand directly to highly relevant dealer inventory. Today, thousands of America's most successful dealers leverage the LotLinks platform to streamline their marketing efforts, deliver higher margins, and turn inventory faster. That's why many manufacturers approve LotLinks for co-op advertising programs with up to 100% reimbursement. If you're interested in learning more about how LotLinks helps dealers sell cars smarter by activating sell-side VIN strategies that proactively manage dealer inventory risk and improve profitability, request a complimentary consultation today at www.lotlinks.com/drive.
And Larry, I want to turn to you here because this isn't the first time the union and the automakers have sort of collaborated on a national crisis.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that how this parallels the way that the plants were integrated. Were first integrated at the start and during World War II. If you go back to the history, if you look at that, there was a huge strike at the Packard plant here in Detroit, long gone. The workers went on strike because some African American employees had been promoted. And Walter Reuther, who was the head of the UAW before his tragic death, he saw that this was a national problem that the UAW had to deal with, much like this is, right? And so the UAW went about taking on desegregating the plants. They desegregated the Rouge plant together with Ford, right, working arm in arm. And they did some really interesting things to try as African Americans moved north, especially during the war, to work in the factories. They did some very interesting things toward desegregation that helped. And I think I see a lot of the same parallels today.
They certainly have a opportunity here to make an impact, although, Jackie, this isn't a UAW issue. Non-union plants are also taking action as well.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that this is, as you mentioned, there's a lot of social benefit to handling the opioid problem, but it's not necessarily a workplace issue. That's sort of the idea, but when it comes to recovery, there's a lot of reasons why the workplace is left to deal with it. They're not in charge of over-prescribing opioids. They're not in charge of a lot of things that impact their workers and their employees, but they have to deal with it. And as they're the ones in charge of the healthcare that the employees are receiving, and they're the ones who need employees. If this is a community problem, it's going to impact the employers in the area. But regarding non-union plants and what they've been doing, it's a lot harder to find out what they have been doing within their workforce because they don't put their contracts online. However, a lot of the automakers in this iteration of the opioid narrative that I've been following, they've been fairly forthcoming about what they needed to do for their employees. And one of the main components is just reducing stigma in the plants, making sure employees know that they have a job waiting for them when they get help and they feel comfortable reporting that they do need help.
Yep.
So, Jackie, we appreciate that. We're going to turn from one important package to another that will be running in this week's edition of Automotive News, sort of a sneak preview here. And Larry, that's the contract negotiations between the D3 and the UAW. And it seems like despite good economic times, fat profits for all the three of them, this is going to be really tough talks.
These are going to be tough talks because you've got a number of factors that are really outside the control of either the automakers or the union that are weighing on the side. And the biggest of those, in my opinion, is the corruption scandal that's been ongoing now for a couple of years.
It's going to be like a cloud hanging over everything, right? Because how do you trust your union when your leaders, some of them are literally sitting in jail right now?
Yeah, we have an issue where the leadership and the membership have a divide. And if you're trying to negotiate a contract, and I've done this, right? I've negotiated contracts before. You have to, if you're on the union side, you have to have your membership with you. And if you don't have your membership with you, that's a problem, especially at ratification. And this is where the rubber's going to meet the road, in my opinion, as we go into these talks, is the bargaining committees may come back from the table with a deal. But if the membership doesn't trust that the deal was the best that they could get, that's going to be a problem.
You take away that extraordinary corruption scandal, there's still all sort of things like healthcare, amount of temporary workers these automakers are using, investments. Then you have wild cards like President Trump. What happens if he tweets halfway through, you guys should not accept this deal, or you know, you should push for more investment? That's gonna shape what's going to be a very long summer and a very long fall.
Well, so, if you can figure out how to guess what President Trump is going to tweet, please tell the rest of us.
Exactly. It's going to be certainly interesting to watch. Jackie, Larry, we appreciate having you on the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank
you. Anytime.
And we thank all of you for tuning in. We'll see you next week.